Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lumbakira, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. I'm absolutely thrilled to share with you today's guest and her fabulous story. She's my fellow Coloradan, but she did not obviously grow up here as I did neither. Sorry, let me start over. Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lumbakira, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. I'm super thrilled to introduce you to my fellow Coloradan, which I cannot wait for her to share her story, how she ended up in Colorado, and tremendous background from military to very visible roles in a wide range of industries, but specifically technology. She is expert in global transformation, and she is someone that absolutely I cannot wait to hear from leadership, transformation, and technology perspective. Without further ado, let me introduce you to Margit Tritt. Margit, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I am thrilled to be on this. I have to admit, I'm a little bit nervous, although I do Zoom calls all day long, but this is a first for me, so I'm excited. Thank you.
I'm so glad that we actually could be the first podcast because obviously global audience is listening to Legacy Leaders, and it's all about that top tier leadership, right? And you are a veteran in that. So I want our audience to really buckle down and be ready for the ride that we're going to take on this journey, everybody that is watching and listening, because this time we have in studio a female legacy leader that already established tremendous legacy, and we cannot wait for you to share all those golden nuggets. So Margit, you obviously grew up not in Colorado, but you grew up in the United States and traveling extensively. Do you mind sharing a little bit about your background and how that gets you on the global journey?
It's an interesting journey, and it does not fit the norms, for sure. I was born in North Dakota. I grew up in South Dakota. So one of the questions I frequently ask people is, how many people have you met from South Dakota? When I was growing up there, there were 600,000 people there. There are a few more now, but not that many. I grew up towards, I was a bit of a rebel, but I was extremely good academically. I graduated towards the top of my class in Watertown, South Dakota. And from there, and everyone thought that I was going to go off and be this highly cosmopolitan woman. I wanted everything I possibly could do to get out of South Dakota. I went to university and the University of Iowa, which I guess is not all that cosmopolitan, but for me it was. I was there for a year and a half, and I realized that I had never learned how to study. I'd never had to study before that. I did not literally know how to apply myself. And I was flabbergasted and more than a bit dismayed by the fact that I didn't know how to do that. And the reality came crashing down on me. I had enough sense as a young person yet to recognize that I wasn't ready to head out on my own. I still didn't want to go back to South Dakota. So at that point, I investigated the military. I did learn from my academic experience that computers were a high priority for me, and they just clicked for me. I'll tell you this right now. If we all know what the Pareto rule is, the 80-20 rule, there are 20% of the people that are absolutely brilliant. I was at the top of the 80%. I was never brilliant, but I was really, really good. So I went in, the choices at that point, way back when, were the only choices I looked at were the Navy and the Air Force. The other options in terms of the branches of the service were not my cup of tea. The Navy didn't allow women to do anything, so I elected to look into the Air Force. I took the exams and based on computers, and the choices were training for 6 weeks, 3 months, or 9 months. Well, duh. I'm going to take the 9 month training course. So I enlisted as a lowly E1 or enlisted low level E1 and took 9 months of training in computers. What it gave me is a really strong understanding of the fundamentals of electronic of computers because they're basically on off switches. I ended up staying in the Air Force for 7 years. I was a short time for basic training in and San Antonio, Texas, 9 months in Biloxi, Mississippi for my technical school, where I actually ended up in a leadership role there as well. And then from there, I went to Eglin Air Force Base, which is in the panhandle of Florida. It was a remote site, not on the main base, where I worked at a phased array radar system. I was there for 2.5 years. And then I had the opportunity to move to Australia and in a location called Woomera, South Australia, which is, if you overlay United States and Australia, Adelaide is where New Orleans is, and Adelaide was about 300 miles inland. It was an eye-opening experience for me to live in a new country. Although they spoke English, it wasn't the same English that I grew up with. So I had that opportunity. When I got out of the service, I married my husband. No, he's from Pennsylvania. I mean, I married him in Australia. We moved back to the States, and I went back to university. The short story is it took me 16 and a half years to get my bachelor's degree after high school. And I took the easiest degree that I could get. And don't laugh at this one, because I had transcripts from 6 different universities. And I got my bachelor's degree in applied mathematics and a minor in computer science, because that computer science with a technical background was to me absolutely critical. And that really set the stage for where I was going.
Thank you for sharing the story and journey, and I love with what you just said, that a lot of times if we don't know who we are and don't have a practical experience, it's very hard to really carve the journey. And that is just perfect example that it's never too late to self-discover and also go back to college. And to be honest, when you mentioned having so many different universities and transcripts, I had similar situation being transplanted from Europe, specifically since collapse of former Yugoslavia, and I can totally resonate with that. Different environments, different school, different education styles, but all of that was amazing learning trajectory. So speaking of that, how that influenced your next steps? Obviously, you've been in military, and what did you do after that that really brought you in heart and center of technology and transformation?
So after we came back to the United States, I did take a short break before I went back to school, because I had 3 children. I had 2 2-year-old twins and a 3rd grader. And that was just, I was blessed to have the opportunity to stay home for a period of time. But I finished my degree when the twins were either in kindergarten or in 1st grade. I don't remember very honestly. And I started out as a software engineer working basically software and hardware interface. Not that much longer after that, I found out this remarkable role that I didn't know that existed, where I could plant 1 foot on one side of the fence and 1 on the other side. And that was a sales engineer. So it was a technical focus, but a business focus. And that's really where I have honed. And that's where I fit. Let's just put it that way. More than anything else, there's many, many, many different titles that go along with that. But overall, I've provided that bridge between the technology and the business side, because I have found that if you get marketing people, architects, technical architects, and finance and sales in the same room, they all may be saying the same thing, and no one understands anything that anyone else is saying. And it's almost like I'm a translator between them. And so that is really a place where I fit. I understand, but here's the business problem. Here's a technical definition of the problem. And here's how these problems can be solved collectively. So overall, that's really what has set my trajectory and what has brought me the unique skills. I don't want to pigeonhole anybody or I don't want to pigeonhole anybody. Let's just leave it that way. But not everyone has that ability to do that. Some engineers think exclusively in black and white, and some other people, other styles, talk only in hyperbole, and they don't understand how they all interact. And so that is a skill that I've been blessed with, that I can understand the multiple sides of the conversation, while they all may be saying the same thing and marching towards the same goal, I help bring them together and bridge those gaps.
That is wonderful. And I'm so glad that you, over the years, not only being as a mother, also a wife, but also professional career woman, post-military, that found her voice, but also found your niche. And I love that you mentioned how sometimes the hybrid skill set, things that were not maybe at the time available, how did you navigate that and found what fits best for you? And as a result, created tremendous success. So do you mind sharing a little bit, obviously, strong leadership skill set, transformation, technology brought you to all of that. What was it to some of the most pivotal things that would you say for everybody watching and listening, that journey that led to that success?
I don't know how to keep my mouth shut. Please don't laugh. I'm bold. I've gained the opportunity and I've gained the knowledge as to when to keep my mouth shut. I've also learned when to say, I don't know, I don't understand. Let me look further into that one. But, or let me ask you to speaking to somebody else in one of these silos, please explain this in a different word so I can help somebody else understand that. So those were some of the key things that I really learned. I don't fit in a box. And so people are really surprised when I don't. And it takes them unawares, but it also is comforting. I also found that as a non-salesperson, but yet still involved in the sales process or the business development process, that I was able to get more information from the technical people than if they were talking to directly to a salesperson, because of course the salespeople have one agenda on their mind and that's to make their numbers. But basically a lot of it had to do with that personal relationship. So while we are on Zoom and we're in different parts of the state, et cetera, the face-to-face is absolutely critical. Yes. And I'm an absolute fan of that. I'm not necessarily a fan of going back to the office, but to be able to establish that one-on-one relationship. And to this day, when I start working with a new team, now, mind you, I'm an individual contributor, but when I'm a leader, I always schedule a one-on-one and I warn them in advance, make yourself camera ready. Guys, put a baseball cap on. I don't care. But the point is that I want to have a one-on-one so that I can read your body language and I can see who you are, so that the next time we talk and we're only on voice, that I can see your body language and mentally see your eye rolls, if you will,
yes,
just by the tone of your voice. So I maintain that that personal interaction and the communication is absolutely critical.
I cannot agree more, but that is fantastic. So attributing to communication and then building rapport, connection and interaction. I love that. And obviously you're dealing with very diverse teams and on the global scale. How do you navigate that effectively and so well? Because we see so many leaders and different teams pouring in extra trainings, et cetera. But ultimately, you know, what is the secret sauce in your mind to have success with not only different geographic regions, the cultures, but also truly to facilitate that phenomenal leadership and great transformation?
So the best story I have on that one, and this is such a fun story. The technical architect in the company I was working for was native Chinese. He was living in France, and French was his second language and English was his third language. Brilliant man, extremely quiet spoken. The customer lived in Texas and was a true blue Texan with all of the attributes that one thinks of a stereotypical Texan. And it was a conference call only, without any video. And although all three of us were speaking some variety of English, the two primaries couldn't understand a word the other one said. So I literally sat in the middle, and everything that the architect said, I translated into generic English American, and the Texan then could understand it. The Texan, with a very strong accent, turned it back around, and then I returned that back to the gentleman in France that was, again, native Chinese. So it was an opportunity to understand. Not that I didn't have to know both cultures that well, but I understood that they didn't understand each other. And I have enough of a standard generic accent, and I understood where both of them were coming from. Again, silos. We've got an architect who speaks very technical, and we have a business person that needs a business problem solved. And so I was able to provide that liaison and that bridge between the two.
That is fantastic. And I love that, because a lot of times people don't think of just that transformation that occurs in a work, either it's around the process or around the operation or whatever might be the case, that also is, and specifically when you deal with diversity, it's cultural, but as you pointed out, it's that also understanding technical language versus business language, and also understanding ultimately the outcome and capacity to move forward. So when you're looking back on all of that you have done, obviously you led with your leadership and with your legacy, and you lived it. And also you left tremendous legacy already. I'm curious now, at this point of your chapter working in such a visible role at Dell Technologies, what would you say it's coming next, and what are you so super passionate about?
Oh, that's a really good question. The reason I was hired at Dell are the things I've talked about. I've left out a number of things. Number one, 16 years after I got my bachelor's degree, I got my master's degree in engineering management, which is basically course for course equivalent to an MBA. But the company, which was a cable industry consortium, didn't do MBAs. They did technical degrees. So I've got the engineering management degree. I also have my PMP, the professional management, project management professional. So I brought these things in terms of the way I think, the very linear thinking, the what are the options. I literally flowchart things in my brain. And I also, the way I think, I have clouds, discrete clouds of things. And eventually, as I'm learning more, they coalesce and make a big picture. What's next for me? I love being an individual contributor. I love having the opportunity to influence the direction of teams. I love the opportunity of taking disparate groups where I have no direct management responsibilities or control, and getting them to work together. Mm-hmm. And that's really why I was hired at Dell. And that's what I have been doing, is I'm working with a client. I'm working with the various silos within the very large corporation of Dell. I'm working with third-party partners as well, and bringing them together as a cohesive unit to be able to solve and to be able to create a solution. My role now is a delivery principal. So it's an individual contributor, but it is to take what has been agreed upon by sales with all of these parties together, and to be able to make it a functional product, whatever it may be, for the client. And then I step back and we move into steady state, and those that do operational things continue to take it over. But that's what I do, is I bring things together and I point out the gaps. And again, I have no authority in terms of a big stick or management responsibilities. I'm an individual contributor, but it's just, that's why it's the group that I'm in. We're a unique group of people in the fact that we coalesce folks together, and we have the opportunity to bring some sanity and also know when to escalate when things are outside of our control, where and when and how to take them up, whether it be an individual that's being a challenge to work with that's not appropriate for the group, when there's somebody that's skilled technically and is seriously lacking people skills, and that's something that recently happened to me. And so I was ready to ask him to leave, demand that he leave the program and find somebody else. In lieu of that, the other solution was we brought in a project manager that did the administrivia and the project management while the technical expert continued on in his job. But I escalated that appropriately, and it's been very successful. Different skill sets, but they together made a whole. So what's next for me? We'll see. I'm looking forward to what is next with Dell. It's not a forever job. I'm not going to work on this for the entire rest of my life. I do see retirement coming down the road at some point or another. And I have other plans in the works already. Some of them are, they're just on hold right now because there just aren't enough hours in the day. So if you want, I'd be happy to go into that, or we can do that at some other time.
That's fantastic. I love that you are also obviously thinking ahead, because with the trajectory and quality of career paths and things you accomplished, it's always that also with so much richness and so many things on personal, professional level, what's left in the bucket list, right? And then also with amazing hobbies. And I know you have a really interest in hobbies too. And if you don't mind sharing a little bit the other side of you, because you do some really creative things and you have really interesting friends on the land where you are living. So tell us about that.
So 23 years ago, we had been living in the booming metropolis of Niwot, Colorado, which I think has 10,000 people in it or so. We wanted some rural property, so we were able to find 5 acres in Colorado with an amazing view of the Front Range. For those of you that are not familiar with it, there's foothills and then there's the high mountain peaks. On a clear day, we can see all the way down to Colorado Springs and Pikes Peak and almost up to the Wyoming border. So it's absolutely phenomenal. And I can see both I can watch the sunrise, and I did this morning. It was gorgeous. And I can watch the sunset over the mountains. And I love that. So for over 12 to 15 years, I raised alpacas. And again, as I said, I had every intention of being this cosmopolitan woman, never thinking about this. My father, way back when, was a farmer in North Dakota. And my sisters always said Dad would have been absolutely flabbergasted to see me out there taking care of livestock with all of the things that go along with livestock. The reason I selected alpacas is that it was a sustainable animal, in the fact that the only thing you do with them is they get a haircut once a year, and it's from there, it's the fiber, it's the wool. I had that made into yarn that prompted me to move into machine knitting. And from there, I've moved into commercial machine knitting. So my retirement goals really are to learn my commercial knitting machine and to focus on that. We retired from the alpaca herd. I sold all of them off a couple of years ago. But in the meantime, I mean, for many years, I was out there bright and early in the morning, feeding and mucking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was doing all the animal husbandry things that one might not expect, including birthing, breeding, mucking the livestock, as well as some unfortunate situations. But it was an amazing experience, and one that I am so thrilled to have had the opportunity to do that. Now we're down to 9 hens, 2 dogs, and 1 cat. So that's where we're at now. But we're still on 5 acres, so we're delighted to have that opportunity.
That's fantastic. And I'm so glad you shared this story, because first time when I heard that, that was fascinating. And I was thinking, it's like everybody knows how it's beautiful to have a sweater from alpaca, or just some type of beautiful shawl or whatnot. And just the fact that you're exploring avenues to do something with that is just outstanding, and have something produced in US.
Well, it's produced in the US, and I'm also having a worldwide reach because in effect, my business partner is based in Romania. He's German. I'm talking with people from South Africa and from Scotland and Norway and Sweden and Canada, and China and Singapore and Vietnam. And so I'm thrilled. It's also leverages my technical background because it's not just a matter of pushing a button. There's actually a lot of computer programming along that goes along with this. So it's a completely another aspect of what I do. I'm also taking a I'm have a trip coming up in February next year. I'm going to Malaysia and working there. I'm helping as a facilitator for a retreat for women that are in the mission field throughout that part of the world. And I'm thinking about the possibility of taking one of my smaller home-based knitting machines along with to give them something to think about that they may be able to do with their population that they work with. So I'm very excited about that as well.
That's fantastic. And giving back and giving opportunities for other women and communities to grow and thrive. That's such a great way with tools, technology, and techniques so that they can be more self-sustainable. But I love also component of sustainability you mentioned earlier. We're seeing tremendous shift right now that's happening with large corporations like Dell with Fortune 500, but also smaller ones where people are craving the connection more with nature, connection more with that holistic type of living, but also greater good and recycling and really utilizing in a good way, resources as well as environment that we're in. So, do you mind sharing a little bit about how all this transpired and how this is all evolving?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I'm not a tree hugger, if you will. I recognize there are needs for I don't have an EV. But in terms of our diet and in terms of our garments and in terms of the impact that we can have on where we're living, we're very responsible in terms of recycling on a personal basis. If my husband happens to be out of town and I accidentally throw an aluminum can away, I feel so guilty that, oh my gosh, he's going to come get me. So we do all of that. We're very careful and very cautious in that respect. One of the reasons I went into alpacas is that it was a small enough animal that I, as a woman, could physically handle on my own, versus if you go into larger livestock, that required a lot of additional tools. Whereas I could wrangle 120 pounds, or with some aids, up to 200 pounds of animal. So that's one of the reasons I went that direction. They were also easier on the property versus horses, which we did have initially, where their hooves were tearing up the ground, et cetera, et cetera. So, we have a balanced perspective in that respect, as to using what we have been given by God, as well as being respectful of what we have.
That's beautiful. That is so beautiful and very conscious living and very intentional. And I just wanted to kudo you because obviously with trajectory of your life and where you've been and where you headed, it's always great to have people to that not only lead their own life, but lead others and really show what's possible. So with that in mind, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, you lived, you led with, and you left tremendous legacy. So what would you like your legacy to be in this chapter of your life? What would you like to be known and remembered for?
Integrity. I'll do what I say that I'm going to do. Being an obvious representation of my faith so that there's no ambiguity there and there's no question that I'm living what I believe. And sharing passion of life, there's so many things out there. People don't know what they don't know. And one of the things that I love to do more than anything else is to help somebody that's really struggling as to where they are and what they want to do. And I love to sit down and work with them. You know, if they're in the midst of career transition, or they want to make a career change or something like that, is to help them understand what abilities they already have. That most people can't see what they have. I can't see what I have, but I help other people see what abilities that they have. We have a common colleague that 10 years ago was working at a golf course and as a relatively low-level PC technician. And today he's the VP of a company. And it is an absolute joy to spend time with him and to see where he has gone and where he has grown. And I'm not taking any responsibility or kudos for his success. He did it all himself, but he had lost so much confidence in himself, and he also didn't see what abilities he had. And to be able to see help him to see that and to grow that. And I've had the opportunity throughout my life to be able to do that with others. I do it with my family. I do it with people that reach out to me. And I love to do that. So who knows? That may be yet another career path for me down the road. I have no idea.
It's beautiful when you look at a people holistically as you do, and also give a people that intuitive nudge of where they should go and be that support. Because right now, more than ever, we need those positive cheerleaders and supporters and people that really focus on positive attributes versus on criticism and things that other people are lacking. And I hope you continue to nurture that, because world needs more of that for sure.
Well, that's my goal. I mean, you know, when people reach out, I'm mentoring a couple of people right now. So, you know, what do you want to do? So the question I always ask, a couple of things. What do you want to do when you grow up? And then here's a piece of homework for you. Write down your absolute ideal job description. What in the wildest of dreams, what do you want to do? Think completely outside of the box. It could be completely unrelated to what you're doing right now. But what makes time just disappear? What do you do so well that you love it and you could just do it all day long? And write that down. It's a harder thing to do than you might expect. And it's not something you're going to whip out in 20 minutes. So, you know, when you ask me for my bio or somebody else asks me for my bio, it's like, okay, I can tell you what I've done, but what am I passionate about? That's a much harder thing to be able to do. So that's my challenge to anybody that's listening to this. If you really want to see who you are, is take that as an exercise and write down what is your ideal job. It could be a paid job, it could be a volunteer job, it could be whatever the case may be. It could be being a mom, a full-time mom. It can be a full-time dad. It can be a farmer. It could be the CEO of a company. It doesn't matter. It could be a teacher, whatever it is. But think about what things just make you a watchmaker, doing things with wood. It doesn't matter. But really, what's important to you? What makes you feel good? And where do you do well? And so I challenge everybody to take that as an exercise. And you'll learn more about yourself than you can imagine. And then the other thing that I always encourage people to do is to start doing informational interviews. So come up with a list of 20 questions, ask somebody that's important or that you respect in industry of whatever sorts, ask for, may I have half an hour of your time? You know, we were given two ears and one mouth. And the reason for that is we should listen twice as much as we talk. So start by asking these 20 questions. You'll never get through all 20. But find out what makes this other person tick. How did they get where they're going? Much of what's what we're doing right now. You're doing an informational interview with me. But have this written down, take copious notes. And at the end of that, say thank you very much. And do you have other people that you suggest that I might want to talk to? But I found when I've done that throughout my life that I've learned more about myself by listening to other people talk about themselves. Because again, we have two ears and one mouth. Use your ears. and learn from other people.
I love that. Specifically, no matter how old we might be, no matter which stage in life we might be, it's always something phenomenal that we can learn from others. And I wanted for everybody watching and listening to take also opportunity to not only listen again, take a notes, but also connect with Margit on LinkedIn and find out more what she's up to. But I love also, if something is important, we'll find the time, we'll find a way. A lot of times people are wasting their time on things that are not as relevant. And as a result, they find themselves in a very dire situation. And I love about you that you're an ongoing life learner, no matter your age, no matter your stage of career, no matter how seasoned veteran you are, from military to technical world, and now to digital transformation and technical transformation, you don't stop. And that is also a beautiful trait for a lifelong leader and lifelong learner.
Absolutely.
If you could summit everything you've been through in thus far in life and professional career, what would be one piece of advice for people that are going through a lot of shifts that not necessarily have to be changing career or looking for a new job, but could be that personal journey when we feel like something is missing and it's a better way or it's another way that maybe we didn't try? What would you suggest for them that are still seeking that new path forward?
So for me, one is my faith. That's a critical one. The other one is don't do it alone. Talk to other people. Take the concept of an informational interview. Find people that you know, that you respect, that have a joy of life that you see, that you want to emulate, and talk to them. Find out what it is that makes them tick. Why and how are they the way they are? Because none of us want to make all the mistakes that are possible. Take the advantage and the opportunity to learn from others. And those personal relationships are so absolutely critical. We talked about that just on working together and that face-to-face contact. So if you have the opportunity, but find those people. And of all of the people that I've talked to, and I wanted to pick their brains, if you will, virtually no one has ever said no. If I say, Isabella, could I take half an hour? Would you be able to find half an hour in your schedule for me just to ask you some questions and to find out more about you? And let me just ask you questions. Would you be able to take that time? I promise I won't take any more than 30 minutes of your time. How many people would say no? I've had CFOs of Fortune 500 companies share details with me about their fears, insecurities, about the company, about their career, that they would never do it. But it's a confidential conversation. It's not one that's going to be published. So look to others and grow from their experiences as well.
That's so powerful. And I love that because we have a tremendous opportunity again to look at things from multiple different perspectives. And again, if we don't step up, if not willing to make a change, it's not going to happen. But everything starts with us. And I love how you look at things holistically, so that obviously that continues to nurture you and be that compass that drives you and moves you forward. So in closing, Margit, you said earlier, obviously, how important it is to truly take a lead of your life, of your trajectory, in essence, which seems like you did very effectively. Also, to be very empowered and speak up and also demonstrate as well, obviously, to ask. But what I love about that journey, not to go alone, because we're seeing right now a lot of indicators where people are alone and lonely and isolated, not only because of the work, just the way society, the structure. And we see a lot of silent suffering. We see a lot of fragmentation. We see a lot of silos. And as a result, we really see unprecedented times, a lot of data and statistics that shows that. What would you say as the last words for everybody watching and listening, as you've been part of transformation, and not only from technology to organization, to team, to talent, and also going through your own personal transformation, What would you say again when that really gets to be difficult and challenging? What is out there? What's possible?
That's a great question. Because there have been periods in my life. There was a really tough time around the turn of the century for me. A number of my father passed away, my mother passed away, brother-in-law passed away, one of my kids was very sick, lost a job, yada da 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 da. I was critical. I mean, I was so down in the dumps. And so the only thing that was going to work, that worked for me, is I took myself out of myself and I started giving back. I started volunteering. And for me, that was the most important thing. It wasn't that I was feeling better because I saw people in worse condition for me, but it's the fact that what I was doing was valuable to somebody else. And that actually paved the way for me for a lot of things, but it was also a tremendous time of personal growth that I understood more who I was. But I also recognized, I am such an avid proponent of volunteering. Find something that is important to you and become involved. I've been deeply involved in my church. Right now, I'm on the board of directors for the Colorado Therapeutic Writing Center. Back in the day, I was involved post 9/11. I was involved. I didn't start out. Well, I started out with career planning for groups of people because that was a tough economic time. And it ended up that I ended up helping in a leadership role for the TSA in setting up organizations and facilities across the airports in the United States. But it all started out by volunteering. So find something that matters to you and get yourself out there, get out of the chair, get out of the house, do what you can, and find a place that you can plug in and meet people on a face-to-face basis and make yourself, no matter what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you're washing dishes, it doesn't matter, but give back. And if you do that, you're going to find out by giving of yourself, you're going to receive so much more than you put out, for sure.
I love that. That is so beautiful. And I cannot agree more. For someone who's been always volunteering, supporting, we always can do more, even if we are in the needs, because that's the beautiful way of healing, beautiful faith, connecting with others, but also feeling that we bring something valuable to the table, regardless in what capacity. So I love that advice. That's fantastic. So where can audience that wants to reach out to you find you, and the best way to connect with you?
Okay, so the name is Margit Tritt. It's Margit. And you can find me on Facebook or on LinkedIn. That's the best way. And feel free to reach out to me. I'm one of the few Margits you'll ever meet in the United States. And if you don't hear back from me within 2 days or so, ping me again. But please do feel free to reach out and I will do what I can. And I would be more than happy to meet with you.
Margit, we just wanted to take a moment just to thank you again for your appearance on Legacy Leader Show, for sharing a little bit of yourself and your amazing journey, as well as opportunity for others to really tap into your wisdom. A lot of great golden nuggets, and we absolutely look forward to take you back down the road, because with some amazing and exciting new things to be shared pretty soon, and we'll definitely love to have you back with us.
Thank you so much, Isabel. I appreciate this. I can't tell you how much. And it's been a great day. Have a wonderful weekend, and safety to everybody that in particular has been affected by the hurricane.
That is so true. Thank you.
One other thing I just wanted to mention is that one of the places that grew me tremendously is when I was in the military. Now, mind you, this was ancient history, and so a lot of the laws have changed and there's a lot of protections in place. But when I was in the Air Force, US Air Force, and I was stationed in Australia, I was one woman out of 150 men. The entire squadron was all men. I was the only woman. And I was in my early 20s, early to mid 20s at that point. And it was quite an experience. There's things now that there's no way anybody would be allowed to put up with, but it gave me the opportunity to draw lines of respect and professionalism that while they weren't legally mandated, they were brought to the table because of who I was, even way back then, as young and immature as I was. But I think it was a valuable experience and has given and has laid a foundation for me as an adult now, more as a seasoned adult, let's put it that way, that I can deal with those challenges. They're not the same as they had been, but it's to be able to deal with differing opinions and just different attitudes and even some of those subtle digs behind the scenes. But I'm thankful for that opportunity, and it was certainly a learning and growing experience.
I'm so glad you shared that, because obviously being pioneering as a only woman in military and specifically in Air Force at the time, and then also early pioneering with technology, was no many women, and it was always predominantly men dominated. How did you actually navigate that very well? I understand your character, your personality, your integrity, and you were the one who was setting up those boundaries when things were a lot of gray area. But I'm sure there were more than that that was really helping out, not only to survive, but also to thrive, to gain respect, to be able to also assume and presume some of the leadership roles. How did you do that so effectively?
I actually don't know what I did. I mean, I couldn't, I don't, that's a great question. It was just raising the bar, if you will, and setting a level of expectation rather than mandating anything. It's not the laws and the rules, et cetera, but it was just a matter of raising the expectations of behavior. And I remember a number of years later, I was leaving a company and there was a going away luncheon. And the comment that came from the group leader was, "Margaret, you raised the level of professionalism." So I'm warm and friendly, but there's still a place and a line that just shouldn't be crossed. And again, it's a matter of integrity, where I had to make some difficult decisions and take some significant steps for some inappropriate behavior. But again, it was done with integrity and with respect. So I think those things combined really are what helped me survive through all of that.
That's fantastic. And it's a great advice. Again, how much leadership and your key leadership traits, but also, as I call it, as a top tier of leadership, it's a legacy, your own doing, where you headed, why you're doing what you're doing, and then also what implication that has not only on you, your family, your children, generations to come, but everybody else that you touch, and the conscious decision to do the right thing no matter what others are doing.
There you go.
That is brilliant.
Okay.
Kudos for that.
Thank you.
Fantastic.